Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Let's Cover It, brought to you by The Covering Church.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you once again for joining Let's Cover It. My name is Dwayne Lee. This is Chris Stumford, and we are grateful that you've taken a little bit of your day or your night to tune in to another episode. We're so grateful that for all of you who take time to do that, we have found that not only we have people nationally, but we have people internationally as well that are watching these episodes. And we certainly hope and pray that they encourage you, that they strengthen you, maybe even challenge you a little bit. And every episode that we've done, every series that we've done, that has been our intent to take the Word of God as our basis, as our foundation, and then regardless of the topic, to be able to mold that together and say from a biblical perspective, this is where we are. And Chris and I, neither one, will deviate from that. We certainly may bring in some other opinions and some other thoughts, but at the end of the day, we always go back to the Word of God because that is final authority. So with that being said, we wanted to start a brand new series on grief or loss. And it is a reality that all of us have to deal with. It doesn't make a difference what it is. Now, I will say that primarily we are going to be dealing with the loss of an individual, a loss of a family member, a loss of a loved one. There certainly are things that we grieve over when we lose a pet, or when we lose a job, or when we have to move, or things of that nature. There are things, there are ways that we deal with that, and there is some grief in that. But primarily, what we want to talk about is how do we deal with grief when we lose someone? And Chris and I, both being pastors and elders, have dealt with people over the years that either one have been extremely strong in their faith and allow God to help them deal with their grief process. But then we've also dealt with people who have had no clue on what to do. They have curled up in a ball, so to speak. They've sat in the corner and honestly have dealt for years, not really dealing with it.
Yes.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. I think I've met many people who live, grief has become a lifestyle for them.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah. It has become a lifestyle for them. And so they are in this, what we would consider a new normal for them, which is not really normal. But they're not willing to get out of it.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And so how I want to start this is what happens when we don't process grief? And there's a lot of things that happen. What happens when we avoid it? You know, of course, it's been said that time heals all. The fact of the matter is it doesn't.
It never does.
It doesn't. And Chris, I want to say thank you once again for the episode that you shared with us, because I know it was extremely difficult. And although it's been a few years, you still deal with that.
Every night, every day.
Yeah. And so the reality is that time doesn't heal everything, and that you have to process what you're going through. And there was an article that I read that talked about the different ways of what happens if you don't process it and some ways to process it. And I think, you know, it's from a secular writer, but I believe that they're pretty close, you know, in the counseling that I've done. And Chris, and I'm sure that you would agree with this as well. We have seen this, but there is a tremendous difference between working through it and not working through it. Wouldn't you agree?
I would say absolutely. I would say that there's either coming to terms with it,
mm-hmm.
or there is just constantly laying in it, laying in the grief. Letting it dominate your thoughts, your mind, your heart, your life.
I mean, I know of people, and my mother, bless her heart, who has gone on to be with the Lord. It took her years when my dad passed away. It took her years to even clean out his closet.
That was the hardest, one of the hardest things I'd ever done.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to be honest, Chris, it didn't make sense to me. I just told her, I said, Mom, let's just do something with the clothes. You know, let's just do something with the stuff that's here. But it really wasn't until she passed away that I was the one that had to do that.
Right. Your own dad's stuff.
Yeah, my own dad's stuff, and now my mother's stuff.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, if I hadn't allowed God to help me process that and to have other people around me, you being one of them, if I hadn't had those people around me, it would have been extremely difficult for me.
I think a friend of mine gave me some advice and said, you're not going to get closure until you are able to let go of the things that belonged to your wife.
Right.
And I sat down, I called my daughter, and I said, would you come over to the house? I need you to help me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this by myself.
Right.
And we went through all of my wife's clothes. I gave them to my daughter, and she went through what she liked. She took shoes that she could wear, and others she donated, and mementos and pieces of furniture and just 1,000 things that belonged, that shaped her or defined her life, if you would.
Sure.
And even after I got remarried, maybe I shouldn't tell this story, but
take it as far as you can.
So even after I got remarried, I still had our wedding picture on the wall of my previous marriage.
Mm.
And my wife said one day, don't you think it's time that you store that away,
right,
and move on, mm-hmm. a little bit? And I said, I think you're right. I will always have the memories of that in my life.
Sure.
And I got to tell you, my wife May has been wonderful at helping me to process a lot of what I deal with, because I still deal with a lot of PTSD over it.
Mm-hmm.
Still wake up at night, cold sweats, still struggle with memories. I actually listened to the podcast we did. It was dropped when it was dropped. That Wednesday I listened to it, and I was driving down the road in tears, you know.
Sure.
Just driving down the road and, you know, listening to myself.
Going through all,
tell a story,
recounting all of those memories.
I'm reliving it all.
Yeah.
As I'm listening to myself recount the story.
Right.
And I see it in all of her family, and much of her family that was around her. And I talked to my brother the other day, and he said, I was just thinking about Dad. My dad was my hero. He was my brother's hero. He said, I spent the entire day today just wishing I could pick up the phone and call him. And so what you said at the beginning of the podcast is true. They say that time heals all wounds. And I think what happens is we just kind of scab over, if you will.
Sure.
And scabbing over means we're no longer in an open wound, but something will come along and pull the scab off.
Mm. And it hurts.
And it hurts. Man, it hurts.
Yeah.
And you just, you're back there all over again.
All over again.
And you're starting over. It's like, okay, now I got to dig my way back out of this. The Lord's got to help me dig my way back out of this. And it can get hard if you're not rock solid in knowing your future, knowing their future, knowing who has control of it all.
Well, yeah. And And in the midst of that, so bottom line is we understand that grief is real and that people process it differently. We understand that completely. And at the same time, there's not a set of steps or a time frame.
There isn't. Some people deal with it differently in different ways.
Absolutely.
I mean, honestly, for me, I had a year to get my head around it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were told 11 months before my wife died, this is terminal.
Right.
And he was honest. He says, I'm the foremost doctor on pancreatic cancer. I can guarantee you that I cannot cure this.
Right.
That's what he told us.
Right.
He said, there is no cure. Even though I prayed and hoped for it and sure. I got all key, I was on this emotional roller coaster the whole time, you know. Hey, they gave her first chemo treatment. We got her cancer numbers back 3,000 and something. It knocked out all these cells, you know, and we were thrilled. And then we go in and talk to this doctor at one of the hospitals. He says, as I talked about last time, we could do this TheraSphere treatment. They give her the TheraSpheres, and we go in and do they do an MRI. Oh man, we got to tell you the tumors in her liver have shrank, and we're all, you know, we're going to beat this.
Right.
And then one day they sit down and say, you need to call in hospice. Hmm. And it all comes down to this whole house that we'd built, whole house of cards, that she's going to beat this and we're going to win this battle.
Right.
And she thought that too.
Sure.
And they sat down beside her bed and said, you know, this whole house of cards came down. And that's when she looked at me. She says, can I just go home? I want to die at home. And I had to leave the hospital that day and go tell her mom.
Right.
That she wasn't going to make it.
Right.
And I remember sitting in the living room with her mom and dad. And I said, I got to tell you, the doctor came today. We're calling in hospice. She's not going to make it. And her mom started bawling. She says, I just believed she was going to do it.
Sure.
And the reason we have grief, if somebody doesn't have grief, man, they are dead inside, because we are emotional creatures.
We are.
There are five. Now, most scholars say there are three words in the New Testament that the Greeks used for love. I really think there's five. One of those is pathos. It's passion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a passion for someone, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be a sexual passion. It can be
sure.
a friendship. It can be a deep friendship. It can be a marriage relationship. It can be one of your children or sure. your parent.
Yeah.
And when they die, when they leave this world, there's an empty hole that only God can fill. If you try to fill it yourself, that's a recipe for destruction.
For disaster. But you and I have both seen it, because, you know, it's when I do funerals, and I may have mentioned this before, but I think it bears repeating, is that life does not get any more real than death.
That's a fact.
And when you're at a funeral, I mean, it doesn't get any more real than that. When you have the opportunity to speak to people and say, look, we're not all going to live forever. And that whether it's you or whether it's you or whether it's you or whether it's the person in the casket, we need to make sure that we are living our lives in such a way that, one, that it brings honor and glory to God, but understand and know that we want to leave legacy.
I was going to use that word. I've always wanted to live my life. And I don't know that I've always succeeded, but I've always wanted to live my life that I would leave a legacy behind.
Yeah.
Something of myself in this world that was beyond me.
Sure. So with that being said, there is a tremendous difference between working through it and not.
Yes.
I was trying to think of another word, but there is another word.
I think that's a good way to put it. I think there are people who have settled into their grief, and it becomes their world. Their social media page is always filled with something about the person they lost,
right.
some memory every day.
Mm-hmm.
It defines their life. Everybody they talk to, and I remember early on when my wife died, I talked to everybody about it. It's one of the ways I was dealing with it.
Sure.
I had to talk about it. I had to, you know, get it out.
Yeah.
And yet there are people that I know today that have lost, have people that have died 20 years ago, and they're still right there. They've never gotten past.
Can I say the word stuck?
Yes, they're stuck in that spot where their entire life since the passing of that person has been defined by the death of that person.
That's right. Yeah. And so you hit the nail on the head when you said as you were working through this process, you would talk about it. You would think through it. You would allow yourself to mourn. I mean, you did.
I did.
You know? And
actually, I mourned for 11 months before she actually died. I know it's hard to put your head around, but...
Well, sure.
I lived every day watching my wife deteriorate, watching her struggle. Mm-hmm. And the hardest thing in the world is to be helpless.
Oh, absolutely. Not being able to do anything.
So you remember back when your dad had cancer, because I remember when your dad got cancer.
Right.
And I remember you telling me one time, I feel helpless.
Yeah.
You can't do anything to fix it.
Yeah. He's laying there in a hospital bed in his own home, because that's where he wanted
to be. That's
right,
yeah.
And the only thing that I could do was give him what the doctors prescribed as morphine.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't doing anything.
No, I was deadening the pain, but it wasn't changing the circumstance whatsoever.
Yeah. And I felt, like you said, I felt helpless.
Yes.
And just processing that. Because I remember my grandparents passing. And when my first grandparent passed, you know, I was only 9 or 10. And I didn't understand it all. I knew he was gone, but it just didn't really hit me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when my dad passed, you know, I was in my 30s, and you know, I had a family of my own,
right?
But I cried like a baby.
I remember.
I'm there in that service.
And just for the audience, I've known you for.
Long time.
Almost 50 years.
Yeah, long time.
And I can count on my hand the times I've ever seen you cry. I would consider you, Dwayne, as a very rock solid emotional guy. I mean,
yeah.
Very just even, you know.
Even keeled?
Yeah, relatively even keeled. And so for you to say that means there was a depth of loss to the very bottom of your soul. There was a depth that you can't even define.
No,
I know that because I know you personally.
Yeah. And I had to process that. And my wife couldn't help me with that really, although she tried. I mean, she really tried.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, if I hadn't have done that, if I hadn't have started the process of working through my grief, I would have gotten stuck. And I know that there are people who they try to get distracted, they try to stay busy, they avoid people, they find substitutes, all of that kind of good stuff that, or not good stuff, but all of that stuff that really at the end
of the day. I'd say most of it's not good.
No, most of it's not good.
I mean, drugs, alcohol, you can get on the list of how they try to deal
with it. Well, sure, yeah. And so I had this individual and who talked me through these. And they're not exhaustive by any means, but 7 signs.
I remember
of people who do not deal
with grief,
their grief.
Yes,
and one of those is compulsive behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you say, well, what in the world is compulsive behaviors? Well, I go on a spending spree.
Yeah.
You know, or
every time I get down about it, I hit the bottle.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
because,
compulsive behavior.
Yeah, because going back to the funerals, I would even say to people, look, you have a choice that you can either place your trust in Christ, but I know that there's going to be some of you who are going to go down to the end of the street and hit a bar, and you're either going to try to find yourself in a bottle
mm-hmm.
or in a tube.
You know what you find at the bottom of a bottle? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
So I think there's a second dimension to this. And it's a lot of guilt.
Right.
I've not talked about this to a lot of people, but I carried a ton of guilt. I had taken my wife into the hospital when she got peritonitis. And it was the antibiotics that they gave her that destroyed her kidneys. And the doctor said she's probably got a couple of weeks, and he was dead on. She lived 2 weeks after that. Hmm. We had been in the hospital 29 days.
Right.
And after she died, I ran through the what ifs. If only I had not taken her in. If only they hadn't put her on antibiotics. Maybe she would have beat this. Maybe she would have won this battle. Maybe. Right.
Right.
And I remember May, I'm married to now, sitting in a car one night. We had been married for a while, and it just hit me. And I was just sitting there. There's been two occasions when it was really tough, and one of them was that night. I was just broken, and she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "May, I carry all this guilt. I don't know who to talk to about it. Mm-hmm. All of this guilt." And she looked at me and said, "Chris, her life was never in your hands. You never had control of this."
Wow.
And that was an eye opener to me to come. Sure. She's coming from the side of, I'm the new wife who, you know, moved into your life from your old wife.
Right.
It was this eye opening moment. You never had control of that. She said, God could have made it, if he willed, that she never got the infection.
Sure.
God could have made it that she never got the cancer.
Right.
You can't take responsibility. And here's what she said. These were wise words. You cannot take responsibility for what you didn't have control of.
Right.
And the light came on, and I instantly was like, for the first time in years, I feel freed from that guilt that I have carried around for years, feeling like I was directly responsible for what killed her.
Yep. Well, I can give you an account going back to my dad as well. You know, trying to give my mother some rest, and I'd try to take care of my dad, and she wanted to hang on as long as possible and not take him to the doctor or not take him to the hospital. And he was in so much pain the night that we actually took him to the hospital. I knew she was trying to sleep, but I hollered upstairs and I just said, "Mom, we've got to take him." And I felt guilty because I knew that more than likely he would not come back home.
Right.
Unless God intervened. And I knew she felt guilty because she finally ended up having to say yes to that. And I know it was difficult. Mm-hmm. And we spent three more days in the hospital. And then they said, "Well, we need to call in hospice," and which my mother didn't want to do that either.
But those words are the hardest words to hear, man.
Oh, absolutely.
When that doctor, I still see it in my head today, as clear as a bell, when he sat down on the bed next to my wife, and I'm sitting in a chair across from him, and he says, "I think it's time that we call in hospice."
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, "I thought we were doing well." He said, "Chris, you've always wanted it to go well, but this has never gone well."
Right.
Those words, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
They're hard.
Yeah, extremely hard. And so again, we're talking about the people who have survived and are still here having to live with it.
Yes.
Having to deal with it.
The leftovers.
Yeah.
If you would.
Yeah.
It's the leftovers.
Yeah.
So one of the things that May and I have done is we started our marriage off with this philosophy. We're going to live every day like it's the last day. Now, you know what I do for a living.
I do.
People are killed all the time. It is the most dangerous industry in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And more people have died in the last few years doing what I do than what's died in the military.
Right.
And so there's not a day goes by, if I'm climbing a 400-foot tower or I'm a mile underground, that I could get killed in a heartbeat.
Sure.
And so every morning when I leave for work, my wife always says, "Come home to me, I need you." That's what she always says.
Yep.
"Come home to me, I need you." She always tells me that, okay? Because she knows what could happen.
Sure.
And so we decided that we want to live every day like it's the last day so that we don't have any guilt.
Or regrets.
Or regrets.
Right.
So I make sure I kiss her every morning passionately. I love you, honey. And I leave. I've decided with my grandkids and with my kids, I've changed a lot of ways in which I interact with them to so that I can leave positive memories. So that, and also so that if something happens to one of them, I don't live in this world of guilt.
Right.
That sounds selfish, but I've been in that world.
Sure.
And it's not a good world.
It's not healthy.
It's not a good world at all. I want to live a life where as much as possible, I show love, I show compassion, I show interest, I want to do those things. So one of the things that loss has taught me, if you will, is how to interact with other people so that if something happens to them, I have a better way of dealing with it. If something happens to me, I don't leave bad memories behind for them.
Right. Right. And so as a result of that, you are leaving a legacy, like you said before. You're leaving a positive influence in the lives of those that are around you.
I pray that's the case. Yes.
I think looking at it from this side, I believe that is the case.
And, I appreciate that.
And that you're doing a great job at it, but that had to be intentional. It is intentional. And you had to get out of this physical, mental, spiritual, emotional moat or boat that you were in and begin, which again, I'm saying there's not a time frame for it or there are certain steps you got to take.
I think we're very emotional. God made us emotional.
Well, he did make us emotional.
And so because we're emotional.
Ecclesiastes says there's a time for everything.
Yeah. And so we are very, you can see it in David when his son was dying.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can see it throughout the Bible. Whenever somebody was sick or died, there was the Jews had this very emotional reaction. Ashes, you know, and
wouldn't eat,
putting ashes on their head, you know,
yeah.
and tearing their clothes
yeah.
and all this. And then all of a sudden the person was gone and they would wash, clean up, put on clothes, and they would move on with their lives.
And that's exactly what David said about his son,
yeah.
because his servants were scared to tell him that his son had died.
That's right.
And
David was sitting there in sackcloth and ashes.
He was.
The Bible says he was there. He was sitting in the middle of the king's house
right.
in sackcloth, which is a very coarse, like burlap.
Right.
And he had ashes on his head. He was covered in ashes and he had rent his clothes.
That's right.
And he was sitting there in his pity and sorrow.
Right.
That's the
praying that God would take care of his son.
Would heal his son.
But he's looking at his servants and they're whispering and he perceives that his son had died.
Yes.
And so he asked his servants, "Is my son dead?" And they said, "Yes." What's he do?
He gets up, he washes his face, he puts on clean clothes, and he says,
"I want to eat."
And he says, "I want to eat." And he says, "My son won't come to be with me, but one day I will go to be with him."
That's right. And that is the key.
So ultimately, there are three ways, I think, of dealing with grief. One of them is to live in it, to wallow in it.
Yeah.
And the second way is to become hardened to it, where you just, "I'm a man, you know, John Wayne, they're dead, I'm moving on."
Right.
But that's not healthy either, because it's all bottled up in there and it's going to come out one day. It's not going to be pretty.
Yeah. And hold that thought, but it reminds me of a pastor who lost his daughter and he would not cry. He said, "I refuse to cry."
Wow.
And I, to this day, that still baffles me.
It does for me.
Oh, absolutely.
If something happened to one of our daughters, it would be devastating.
Oh, absolutely.
And so either
wallow in it or
harden up, you know. So years ago, I was talking to a buddy of mine. When I say a buddy of mine, it's interesting because he was in his late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he had actually been in World War II. he was in the Merchant Marine, and his ship got torpedoed by a submarine.
Oh, wow.
And he had just bought a brand new watch coat, and it went down with the ship. And he was so angry that he was being shot at and couldn't shoot back, he joined the Army. Okay, so he goes through World War II as an infantryman.
Right.
By the time he gets to Korean War, he is a lieutenant. He's in command of a, you know, a company of men.
Right.
And he had, I didn't know this until, this has been just a few years ago. He's dead now, but he told me this story. He said, I sent this patrol out. We were sitting in church. He brings out this piece of paper, and I could see he was hurting. Looking at this piece of paper, and I said, Jim, are you okay? And he said, I found this piece of paper. It had some names on it, and some of the names had an X next to it. It was a list of like 8 or 9 names.
Right.
I said, Jim, what is this? And he gave me the date in 1950. He said, I was on Pork Chop Hill. And I sent a patrol out. And he said, these men died under my command. I'm responsible for their death, and I've never been able to deal with it. And he got up and went in the men's bathroom.
Right.
And when I walked in the men's bathroom, he was leaning on the sink, crying like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I've never wept over the loss of these men. This was 2000 and something. This is 50 years.
50 years, yeah.
That he had carried that.
Right.
And I looked him in the eye and said, Jim, you were never responsible for those men dying. Their death was always in the hand of God.
Right.
You just did your duty as a lieutenant.
Right.
I respected him highly, but I could see the pain.
Sure.
50 years of pain that this man carried in grief over the loss of these men.
Yeah. So with that being said, that's...
Oh, the third thing.
Oh, the third thing. Yeah,
third
here we
one,
go.
The All third right. one, how we can deal with it, is a biblical way.
Oh, who would have thunk that, right?
Yeah, it is the idea that we know that God has put us on this world for a purpose
right.
and a life. Mm-hmm. And the loss doesn't define our life.
No, it does not.
It defines the life of the person who died.
Sure.
But it cannot be allowed to define our lives.
Right.
Because we still have purpose after that loss.
Absolutely.
Our job is to continue on and to live a life that's pleasing and honorable to the Lord.
Yep.
My job is not to make, I never have said to my, I have said it, but it's not really a proper way of saying it. I want to make my dad proud of me. And I believe in Hebrews, it talks about the great cloud of witnesses. I think that's the saved mm-hmm. that are in heaven watching us run our race.
Yeah.
I think that my dad is up there. My late wife is up. I think my mom is up there. Your mom and dad are up there. I think we have all these loved ones that are watching us mm-hmm. in our race mm-hmm. and cheering us on
cheering
according to that
on.
Bible,
Absolutely.
According to that verse.
Yeah.
They can see us.
Yeah.
But I don't live my life so that my dad will be proud of me.
Right.
I want to live my life so that I hear the Lord say,
well done.
That's the goal, even in loss.
Even in loss.
To live a life so that you hear Jesus Christ say, well done.
Well done. So I think that's a great way to end, because we're going to come back and in our next episode talk about hope.
Yes.
And really what hope means
looks like.
From yes. a biblical perspective. And so with that being said, listen. If you are struggling today over the loss of a loved one or something that has really grieved you, we're praying for you. We're praying that God would give you insight and wisdom. And you know what? Maybe even bring somebody by that will help you through this process.
I think I don't want to leave him alone, too.
If you
can get a hold of us.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you can get on all of our social media platforms. There's a way in which you can contact The Covering.
Yeah.
We'd be more than happy to respond to you.
Absolutely.
You know, we probably would do it electronically, not necessarily
right. but still.
Phone calls. I get, you know, 150 a day already. But
yeah.
And I'm not trying to be cold, but we'd be more than happy to try to
oh, absolutely.
Send you resources and try to help you in any way that we can. And fortunately for us in our church, we have a licensed We have a licensed psychologist.
We do.
Who can help in that area.
We do.
In our church himself.
And I'm hoping that in this series.
We've been trying to drag him on here.
I know, we can't get him to commit.
That's okay. On, but I'm telling you.
Even if we have to do it by phone, I'm okay with it.
He is an outstanding psychologist.
Absolutely.
With a heart that's the size of Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, we are here for you. And we certainly hope and pray that that will help you along the way. Reach out to us. We're praying for you, praying that you'll be encouraged and strengthened by what you've heard today. And until then, may God bless you and enrich you.
Thanks again for joining us. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the Let's Cover It podcast, brought to you by The Covering Church.